The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests, and are not those of Pesmo Radio, its employees or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements of any radio show programs or products mentioned on air, on our website, social media accounts and marketing materials. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to Pesmo Radio, its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing Pesmo Radio.
Are you a songwriter? Are you looking to turn your songwriting passion into a full-time gig? Whether you are just at the start of your songwriting journey or a seasoned industry professional, this show is made for you. Welcome to The Songwriter Show, bringing together songwriting news, interviews, and community. Now, welcome your host, Soronto.
Thank you for tuning in and welcome back to The Songwriter Show. I'm your host, Sorantos. I'm a solo music artist who's been writing lyrics for as long as I can remember. Words are so important to me, and that's why I'm thrilled to host this show for you every Tuesday evening. I believe that every song is a story. The Songwriter Show is broadcast live on number one ranked Pesmo Radio and has listeners in all 206 countries in the world and every state in America. The station is also licensed with ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, and SoundExchange, and has partnerships throughout the music industry, including iHeartRadio and exposure to over 300 million listeners. Tonight's guest is Blue Eyed Christ. Blue Eyed Christ is the electronic industrial rock project of established producer-engineer John D. Norton. John has worked with many of the biggest artists in music, helping them achieve their visions, such as Prince, Fergie, Lady Gaga, and Dr. Dre. In contrast, Blue Eyed Christ is 100% John's artistic vision in the studio. That vision is the visceral combination of heavy electronic industrial rock mixed with personal lyrics and just the right balance of hooks and noise. Blue Eyed Christ is the combination of John's experimental Chicago tracks background mixed with the pop and polishing he brings to other artists.
And now, welcome this week's special guest.
Welcome to the show, John. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, my friend. I'm looking at your bio here, and it's very, very impressive, man. You've been doing this for a little bit, huh?
Yeah. I actually wrote a lot of my first album that came out in 1991 when I was in high school. It came out when I was 19. I was in college at that point. But yeah, so I've been doing the songwriting and engineering and mixing and production and all of that, since I was a kid. Basically, you know, Blue Eyed Christ was my project, and then it around the year 2000, I decided to get serious in the studio about producing, mixing, engineering other established artists and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I've been doing this 7 years, and mixing engineers, I think, are one of the most undervalued professions, because I used to use a mixing engineer that was awesome my first 2-3 years, and he since got really big and went into other projects. He couldn't service my indie stuff anymore, and I've noticed a huge drop off, and I think that's just, man, you guys are so valuable.
Yeah, the mixing and mastering and all of that is really important. I don't think a lot of people necessarily understand that, and honestly, it really is a challenge these days for somebody like myself, because credits have kind of fallen by the wayside. So you're even less known than you were 20 years ago, when everybody bought CDs and would at least, you know, see the credits of who mixed and produced the records and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's hard to actually find. I don't know what services you're on, but Sound Better, Craigslist. I've tried all these services, and it is a shame that you can't readily find who mixed something, because if you find a song that you like and that style, a lot of times that'll tell you a lot about who you should use for your music.
Yeah, definitely. But the problem these days too is a lot of the credits get lost along the way too. Not only does it not make it to Spotify or something like that, but I'm saying there's a lot of records that I've engineered that I haven't even been credited on. And it's not malicious or anything. It just kind of gets lost in the chaos of everything. But yeah, I actually am on Sound Better also, because I do offer mixing and engineering and production, mixing, production and mastering remotely via the internet for people via Sound Better, independent artists and stuff like that. So people can always look me up there, John D. Norton on Sound Better.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I hope we can draw up some business for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need a good mixer. Definitely.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to definitely email you after the show because it's really hard to find someone that meshes, you know what I mean? That really can take your music and take your tuned vocals and do layers on the vocals and do like just mixing each of the instruments. It really makes a huge difference. Otherwise you get a muddy mix and it just is not the same.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it just comes from years of experience. Like I think a lot of times people try to hire somebody really cheap on like Fiverr or something like that. And you're not really doing yourself a favor if you go for somebody who's kind of a novice, who's not established. I mean, my recommendation for people is always like, you know, look at albums and singles that you like and try to figure out who mixed that and try to contact them or, you know, that kind of stuff.
I was going to go off into some of your current projects, but one last question. What suggestions do you have for some of our listeners are indie artists like myself, and they don't have this huge budget to hire like Grammy nominated people or people work with big artists. What do you do then? You're kind of between a rock and a hard place. You don't want to mix it yourself because you're not as good, but you don't have this kind of budget or the points to give away like the big mixing engineers desire. What do you do then?
Honestly, I think SoundBetter is a good resource for a lot of people. You know, I've been pretty happy with that. And you know, my rates that I offer on there to stay competitive are way cheaper than what I charge the bigger labels. So you may be able to find somebody who's maybe bigger or more established than you think, who's on SoundBetter, just cutting good deals for sort of indie artists and stuff like that. But definitely, if you don't have any budget, I guess you just kind of got to do it yourself.
Yeah, okay. It's fascinating, and I know we got distracted, but that's really interesting. And Paul, one of our listeners, is asking what I just asked. What do you do if you're an indie artist and you can't? So, Paul, I would listen to John, and I would go to SoundBetter. I have had some success there, but hopefully you can get someone who's really talented to work within your budget.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. John, tell us a little bit about you. What kind of instruments do you play? What is your first passion instrument wise?
Well, to be honest, I always consider myself more of a songwriter than a great musician or anything. Like I took piano lessons when I was a kid, and definitely my background with Blue Eyed Christ and that, it usually starts with programming and MIDI and synthesizers and that kind of stuff. But I play a little bit of guitar. I really enjoy drum programming. I think with my industrial background, the drum programming is something that I'm really good at. Like that's why a lot of my major label clients that I work with and stuff like that are people that are really into the drums and stuff like that. I seem to be really good at that. But yeah, I play a little bit of piano, bass, a little bit of guitar, but I wouldn't consider myself like, you know, great at any one of those. But I'm, you know, good enough to at least be able to play my songs.
Yeah. I think what you said is really true too, is if you're going to program things with a drum machine or loops or having a mixing engineer that can make it sound more authentic and sometimes more human or more refined is a huge advantage.
I will say though, when I was growing up, people would always have the attitude of like, oh, it's not real music. It's like, it's electronic. All you do is press play. And back then it really wasn't, but it's kind of sad to see how it's sort of morphed into that. Like you see a lot of people who just put a few loops together who go, this is my song. It's like, really? That's not really a song. You know what I mean? So even though I kind of come from this electronic background and I'm somebody who's into technology, I really loathe like those programs of like, oh, scroll through and pick a melody. You know, it's like it's not exciting to me as an artist. I mean, I guess for some people that's kind of fulfilling, but to me the point is to do something that kind of, especially with Blue Eyed Christ, because I work on pop music for a living, you know, so very easily I can hear like verse, chorus, verse, you know, like the pop song arrangements and stuff like that. So I try to do something different with Blue Eyed Christ to try to bring, you know, a more experimental approach to the table. But that being said, frankly, I'm a lot less experimental than I think a lot of my industrial counterparts, because I do really appreciate the idea of a song and a great chorus and good hooks and that kind of stuff.
No, I get it. How do you divide your week? Is it like 20% mixing, 20% your band? I mean, how do you figure out what you're doing?
Honestly, like, unless I have something like, say, the Blue Eyed Christ album that just came out, where I really had to prioritize that. Usually I just kind of work it around, you know, I'm a freelance mixer, producer, engineer, and, you know, I'll get really busy sometimes and, you know, not be able to work on any of the Blue Eyed Christ stuff for like, you know, a month or two or something, but then there'll always be some sort of a slow spell where I have like, you know, time to concentrate on Blue Eyed Christ. So I just kind of work it around the sort of larger projects.
Sure. Okay. Which famous musicians do you admire?
I mean, it's going to sound like, odd because I'm going to name someone that I worked with, but Prince. I mean, when I worked with Prince, that was like a dream come true because like the Purple Rain tour was one of the first concerts I ever saw when I was like a real little kid. And I was like a massive Prince fan. And he really did not disappoint in the studio. I worked on the Musicology album. I was one of two engineers on that. And basically that was an awesome time in his career. He was making a very calculated comeback to do an arena tour of the hits and stuff like that. And it was really cool, dude. There were some nights where it was just me, Prince, and the other engineer in the studio. And then there were some nights where it was the whole band and we would be like recording for the Grammys and stuff like that. So it was, you know, Prince definitely, I mean, just the sheer artistic genius of working around somebody like that was just like completely amazing.
Yeah, I saw Prince in concert once and it was after he was the symbol and, you know, he had all that clash, but he gave out his CD for free.
That was the Musicology tour. Was it like a big arena?
It was so cool.
The crazy part was I got the gig working with Prince and he had been laying really low before that, like just releasing these like Jehovah's Witness EPs of like weird instrumental jazz stuff and stuff. But it was like that was his big sort of calculated comeback. I really feel very fortunate. Like to me, that was the last time Prince was like really great, was that Musicology tour and all that. And I think he knew that he was kind of getting older and stuff and really wanted, because, you know, he's the artist that will always sort of alienate his fans. Because trust me, I saw him like so many times in that few months that I worked with him. I would go to the small House of Blues shows. And like in theory, you would think, wow, that's really cool. It's cooler to see Prince at a small club than it is at the arena for the Musicology tour. But the arena, he was giving the fans what they wanted, the hits and stuff like that. And those, when he would do the House of Blues shows, it would just be like, again, it would just sort of be jamming and like stuff that he wanted to do, like obscure jazz covers and stuff like that. Like that guy honestly just really loved to play. he just lived and breathed music, honestly. So somebody like that has to be at the top of my list.
Yeah. And I think, I don't remember, it was probably around 2004 or so, but yeah, I remember the synth guy, piano, on his tour. It was crazy. I don't know who it was, but I have never seen someone between Prince and his guitar and this synth keyboard keys player. It was like, the guy was so talented. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I'll tell you that Musicology tour, they hooked me up with like front row at the Staples Center. And you would think like an arena show, it would be like, oh, not that cool. But I was like, oh my God, he made that show like so intimate. And I believe that was a show that was in the round also. So even though it's front row, it's like, you know, he's turning around the other three front rows too. Yeah. But what I'm saying is he knew how to work the crowd and make that like feel very intimate. It was like, honestly, that was a great, I'm glad that you got to see him on that tour in that era. Cause again, that was, I'm obviously biased, but that was a great tour and era for him.
I'm trying to remember, I don't know where I heard this, but talking about live shows, they're talking about, you think people like Prince make it look easy, but he sits there for an hour practicing a little mic flip or something. And the effort that he puts into his shows was incredible from what I've read.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely would work that band really hard, for sure. First and stuff like that, because we did a lot of that stuff, too. But, yeah, I mean, you're on call 24-7. See, I was cool because I only worked with him for a couple months for that specific project at the studio out here in Los Angeles, where, like, I have other friends that have engineered for him for several years and stuff like that, and most of them get pretty bitter because it's like you'll get the call at, like, 3 in the morning. Prince wants to go record. And it's like, okay, now I got to go to the studio.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
you work with him, it was definitely, like, a 24-7 kind of gig. It wasn't even that much work. It was just on call pretty much.
Yeah.
A lot of work, don't get me wrong, but the guy was juggling a lot more than just the studio. So we were a small part of his day.
Yeah. So let's talk about your band here a little bit.
Yeah.
How often do you guys practice, gig? Obviously, with coronavirus, you probably don't do any live tours right now, but tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I haven't been playing out for the last several years. I mean, the last real shows that I did was probably like in Germany in 2008, because Blue Eyed Christ works much better as like a full band, and it's pretty much me in the studio. So it's like it's very different than like a gang of four that go and get in a van or an RV and tour or something like that. There's logistics involved of me teaching the band the parts, and like, you know, I don't have like permanent members or something like that, and you know, obviously I have to pay them too, so it has to be centered around a tour kind of thing. So I'm actually one of the only people, when I get the question, since I've been doing all these interviews recently about, oh, how has the pandemic affected your touring, I was like, I actually kind of wasn't planning on touring for this anyway, because I was, what I thought I was going to do touring wise and live wise was, I have a project with Groovy Man from My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. He's the singer of the front man of My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. And we have our project, Trash Deity, that came out on Metropolis in 2018. And we're a duo. So I thought that he and I would tour this year is Trash Deity, because, you know, that's some easier logistically. We could go out as a duo, just me and him and like one or two crew or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating.
I do hope to tour at some point off of this album. I really do want to start doing some Blue Eyed Christ shows again. But again, it has to logistically make sense, which I don't see that happening anytime soon, really.
Yeah, I agree. How do you balance the music life you have with other obligations, family, friends?
Well, my family doesn't live in Los Angeles, so that's not really that hard. The hardest thing is maintaining relationships. Like, I don't actually have like a girlfriend or a wife or anything like that. No girlfriend currently. And, you know, that's the hard part, because they're not always understanding of the not being able to like know what your schedule is going to be in advance kind of thing. When you get on some of these projects, it can be a lot of late night kind of hours and stuff like that. So it's definitely a challenge, the social life aspect of it. But I mean, music is definitely like what I do for a living. So it's like, if I have a big gig that I have to do, like a Black Eyed Peas or a Fergie or a Backstreet Boys or something like that, I have to do that. You know, I mean, it's like, I mean, as much as I love Blue Eyed Christ, it's not what I make my living on. You know, it's like something, it's definitely an established underground industrial project. You know, this is my fifth album, and my first one was from 1991. So, you know, I'm definitely an established artist with a certain following, but it's not like a mainstream kind of following. You know, nobody bought records anymore, honestly. So all the money is from the touring. So since Blue Eyed Christ doesn't really actively tour a lot, it really cuts down the revenue stream. What's interesting on that is, you would think, oh, it's just the shows, but that's where a lot of these smaller artists actually sell their shirts, sell their CDs. Like, there's a lot of industrial fans, because they're a little bit older, who still would buy a CD, but they're going to buy it at a show for a memory. They're not going to go to Amazon.com necessarily and buy your CD. So from not touring, it actually takes away a lot of revenue streams, I kind of have learned.
Yeah, absolutely. When you do your own songs, music, do you do music first, lyrics first, melody? How do you start?
Yeah, I usually do the music first. I usually start with, like, you know, some kind of drums and a bass kind of thing. I mean, every song is different, you know. Some songs take, like, a total of 24 hours. Some songs take weeks or something. But I usually like to start with the music. I'm very prolific with the music. Like, as a producer who also does tracks for other people and stuff like that, I always have piles of tracks. And basically what ends up sort of usually being a Blue Eyed Christ album is the ones that I end up being inspired to sort of write lyrics to. So I start with the music, and then I usually kind of have a good arrangement when I do the instrumentals, so it's sort of inspiring with different sections. And then I sit down and I'll write lyrics, and then go back and, you know, alter the music, and they kind of, you know, play off of each other. You know, once I add the lyrics and vocals, then things change a bit musically, you know, whether I'm adding things or taking things out or changing arrangements.
Yeah. So one of our listeners, Becky, is asking if you do collaborations, if you do work for hire agreements. Sounds like she's interested in how you would work with someone like her.
Right. I do collaborations, like in the sense where like other sort of established industrial artists kind of stuff, meaning like I did some mixing for Mia Fisher from ex-vocals of Lords of Acid. And she did some songwriting and vocals on my song and stuff like that. But usually if it's the pop stuff, it's just kind of more exclusively a work for hire. I'm not the kind of mixer or producer that's ever like, no, I won't work with that. You know, I always try to find the best in any song. Like anytime I go to mix a song or something, I always kind of think like, what if I was like the biggest fan of this artist? Like, how would I want this song to sound? So basically it just honestly comes down to budget. If somebody has a budget to hire me to mix or produce or remix their songs, I'll do that. The things that I usually do, like I said, that are more sort of a barter kind of thing is more intimate friends that I've had that are part of the industrial community or scene where we'll do remixes for each other and stuff like that. But yeah, generally it's worked for hire.
Okay. We're going to hear your song here in a minute. Tell us about the song. What inspired it? What do you want us to take from it?
America H is one of my favorite songs for my new album, World on Fire, which came out May 22nd on Distortion Productions. And it's about sort of sifting through and trying to understand all the information that's being fired at us. Like there's a lyric in the chorus that says, it's in the lens you use that will make up your truth. What that means is if you watch like Fox News as opposed to like CNN or something, your narratives of how you view the world will be very different.
Okay. What's the lead instrument for this song?
The lead instrument? I think the bass line is actually very melodic sort of on there. I think that's sort of the bass and drums are sort of the driving force of that song.
Okay. Awesome, my friend. All right. Let's take a listen and we'll come back and talk. Okay.
Cool.
All right. Here we go. Check it out.
Your truth.
Well, that was very, very cool, man. You got to tell me more about this band of yours. Tell me more about what you guys are doing.
Well, yeah, the new album World on Fire just came out, and that's, you know, what I'm here promoting. And, you know, it's really exciting. It's my first album since 2014, so it's my first album in 6 years. It's something I'm really proud of. I spent a couple years on it. It's interesting because your show is a songwriter show, and what really actually dawned on me with this album was how, like, when you write a song, art morphs and changes over time. It's not just what your meaning is. And what I mean by that is my whole album seems to be like coming true. It's incredibly sort of like prophetic. Like even the cover with the face mask, that wasn't a statement of the coronavirus or anything at all. But my point is I have a song on my album called Take It to the Streets. It's a song about violent protests. That was written like a couple years ago. But since George Floyd and all that stuff, it's like, wow, oh my gosh, it just seems that much more relevant and takes on a whole different layer of meaning than me, the original songwriter, even intended. And that's kind of what I guess the lesson that I'm learning with this is not only is there the intention of what I write when I write a song, but then when it goes out in the world, because of what external forces in society, it can take on a whole different meaning.
Yeah, okay. How would you answer to someone getting into business or being in it for a few years? How do you make it in this business? How would you answer that?
Oh, honestly, I have no clue. The whole business is so different than it was when I was getting into it initially, than when I was breaking into the professional mixing and engineering around, like, you know, 2000. It's all changed since then. I was coming up at like literally the worst time, meaning like right when I was coming up, like trying to go from assistant engineer to engineer around like 2000 to that 2001. That was like right when Napster like was happening. So it was like,
wow. Yeah,
it was crazy because within a period of a year, I saw the whole industry like shrink by about 3/4. Like everything is supply and demand. So like it basically all of the record labels were like, we're dropping any artists that we were developing and we're just concentrating on the artists that sell records. So it's like my job wasn't necessarily dependent on record sales, meaning being an engineer, but it was dependent on record labels making albums. So when they stopped making that many albums, it's like suddenly you have... Oh, and coupled with that, this is the craziest part, is like everybody now is like, I'm an engineer. I know Pro Tools because
yeah.
It's, back when I was coming up, you sort of were mentored. You'd get a job at a studio as a runner and then work your way up to an assistant engineer and then work your way up to engineering, you know, and it was very handed down. It's a very, like I said, it's very different now, but I don't know how artists or mixers or engineers or anybody can cut through the glut of product out there, of people competing for the jobs. It's very competitive, the music industry. You know, sometimes I'll meet people that are sort of entrepreneurial who want to get into the music industry. And I'm like, this is not the industry that I would get into if my goal was to like make money quickly.
Yeah. That is very true. There's probably, you could just put your money in the stock market and it'd be probably a lot more likely to grow than if you put in the music business.
I wonder what the future is going to be, frankly, because as I mentioned, all of the money has shifted to the live shows. Where back when I was coming up, all of the money was from selling CDs and records. So now that we're so dependent on these live shows and nobody can go out and tour, how do these artists even make a living? I mean, honestly, even before the pandemic, we've seen the erosion of the middle class of the music industry. I mean, just like a lot of America, meaning that like the middle class has been disappearing. It's also been disappearing from the music industry as well. Like basically what I'm saying is you have these artists at the top that are the ones that I work with. And then you have like hobbyists. You don't really have like a middle class a lot of the industrial artists are actually the middle class of that, meaning that they actually make their living doing that music and don't have like day jobs, but it's hard. It's definitely harder than it was.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. You know, I like to ask everybody on the show about scams. Anything you want to warn us about that's common out there or anything you've fallen for, just so we can protect each other?
I mean, mean, I haven't really fallen for much, but I do. Some of the people, the independent artists, when I mix their songs, they'll be like, oh, I sent it to this company and they're really interested. And they're interested in like them paying them to like promote their song or something. So I think people just have to be careful, because I think there are a lot of legitimate businesses out there that you can hire to help promote your song or your album or whatever. But I also think there's a lot of people who will scam and play off the naivete of new artists and kind of go, oh, I love that, and play off of their ego. Oh, you love my music? Yeah, just give me X amount of money and I'm going to promote it for you. You know, where it's, they just have to be careful of the ulterior motives, because it can be hard, especially when somebody's sitting there telling you that they really like what you do.
And that's part of, I think, what experience gets you, right? It gets you the right doors to knock. And if you have $1,000 to spend on Spotify, knowing the right, you know, where the labels put the money, as opposed to the people that are full of fraud and they're not going to get you anything except bot play.
So yeah, I think that's
the difficult part to this, is you've been in the business a long time. You probably have more of a clue of legitimate friends or people in the business than someone that just started.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also part of a sort of scene in a culture, that whole industrial sort of thing. What's weird to me is the people who like want to hire promoters just to get like likes on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, where it's like, really, that's why you do music, just to like get paid to get somebody to randomly say that they like your song? Like, my point is to have a connection with people. See, I'm best known for my song from 1991 called Catch My Fall, which had all these suicide samples and was about suicide. So I'm very used to like having this very personal connection with my fans. Like, 99 times out of 100, when somebody contacts me, it's about their personal connection with that song, be it their mother killed themselves or they felt like killing themselves or something. And I really value that. Like, as an artist, I actually really think it's cool that, like, that I have these fans that have been affected in this sort of way. I don't really give a shit about, I have X amount of likes from a bot. Like, how is that fulfilling to you as a songwriter? I just don't.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I've been doing this 7 years, and I got to confess, when I first started, I did try some marketing and some things that I realized are completely worthless. Someone liking your song is completely worthless, because it doesn't translate to them buying it. It doesn't translate to them wanting to come see you at a concert.
Exactly.
So a connection is so much more valuable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it was like a promoter who's promoting to my audience, because Blue Eyed Christ isn't the biggest industrial band. If you can get my music to people who like Nine Inch Nails and Thrill Kill Cult and all those other great artists, that's useful to me. Not a bot or just somebody who knows nothing about that scene just randomly liking a song.
Yeah, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. What kind of connection are you trying to establish with your fans now with your band and this new CD you just put out?
I mean, this has been a really cool one, because like I said, it seems so prophetic. Like, everything is sort of coming true. So it's like, I really did want to get this album out because it seemed like so timely and important, you know? I honestly think that this album has really been resonating really great with my fan base and my audience, because it sort of ended up speaking about this universal stuff, the sort of zeitgeist of these cultural shifts that we're sort of going through right now. My first album in 1991 had a lot of my political sort of songs and stuff like that. And then I kind of went more of the sort of Nine Inch Nails introspective sort of way with my other albums. So this is kind of me coming back full circle and being pissed off or being angry again, and feeling inspired to write songs with more of a political nature. So this album kind of combines both the political and the personal side of songwriting that I'm known for.
Yeah. So one of our listeners, Pam, asked a simple question, which I know you're going to love to answer. What is industrial music?
Oh, I actually think a lot about this, because people ask me about this. I think it's more of a cultural attitude and that than it is like a definite musical sound, because the term doesn't really mean anything. I mean, it came from like people banging and clanging in factories. And then it kind of got most known in the sort of, you know, early 90s and late 80s and early 90s with the Ministries and the Nine Inch Nails. It's kind of the heavy electronics and guitars. But there's so many different kinds of industrial, from like funk industrial to metal industrial to experimental industrial. I know a lot of my peers really, like Ministry hates it when you call them industrial. A lot of these artists kind of run from that term. But I've always sort of embraced it. But again, to me, it's more about a mindset and a sort of culture and a scene than it is about a definitive musical sound. But if I had to sum it up, I'd say to me, it's sort of the heavy electronic music is the heavy electronics is definitely a signature element of industrial.
Yeah. Okay. Any hidden superpowers you want to confess to on the air here?
Superpower. I wish I had some superpowers, especially now. Huh? But yeah, I don't think I have any superpowers.
No, you're not going to be starring in the next Marvel movie or anything like that?
No.
All right. Where do you think the music business is going in the next year? Any predictions?
I don't know. I honestly wonder how people are going to survive without the live shows. I wonder if you... I know in Chicago that Local H just did an outdoor drive-in show. I know that there have been a few places around the world that tried to experiment with these sort of drive-in concerts.
Yeah.
You know, if you were asking more sonically where things are going, I don't know. I mean, who knows? I mean, the basic kind of pop stuff has been really dominating for the last several years. I mean, honestly, what I work on for a living is very different than the music that I listen to. Most of what I listen to is much more sort of like underground and experimental stuff. I keep up on the pop stuff because I have to, for sure. Yeah. And I enjoy it. I enjoy it. Let me be clear, though. It really does bum me out because I come from that sort of like 90s indie scene where people looked at, oh, you're a sellout if you're mainstream, which you try to talk to a kid about that now, they don't even understand like what the term sellout means. It's just much. But what I'm saying is I have my indie friends who look down kind of snobbish at me working on pop stuff. Oh, you work with like Fifth Harmony and Fergie and this and that. But honestly, the thing that working in the pop stuff has really taught me is there's just two kinds of music, dude. There's good and bad. Like every genre has really cool music and music maybe that's not so cool. And I think that like I'm actually really grateful that my career took the turn to that and has exposed me to so much different kinds of music that I wouldn't be exposed to. So I just didn't want to come off overly negative with the indie attitude of, I don't really listen to a lot of the mainstream stuff, because I actually think there's a lot more value in that than people give credit to. I mean, there's a reason people like those songs. They resonate with them for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Do us a favor, before we let you go here, tell us about your contact information. Where can people buy your music, stream it, your website, anything you want to share with the fans?
Yeah, all my albums are streaming online wherever you like streaming music, be it Spotify, Apple, or wherever. If you're actually like physical product, my new album does have a physical CD, so you can get that on my Blue Eyed Christ Bandcamp or from the record label Distortion Productions, which is the label that I'm on. To stay in touch with me, honestly, I'm mostly on Facebook. I do have a Blue Eyed Christ Instagram. I'm more active on my personal Facebook and my Blue Eyed Christ Facebook. If people are interested in hiring me for mixing, because I know we talked a lot about that, if people want to hire me for mixing, mastering, or production, they can definitely look me up on Sound Better also. I'm there under John D. Norton. My last name is spelled N-O-R-T-E-N. Every other Norton is pretty much N-O-R-T-O-N. So just be careful when you search for me to search for John Norton with an E, and I should pop up because I'm probably about one of the only ones with an E.
Perfect, my friend. All right. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. It was an absolute pleasure, and I'd love to have you back anytime.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So to any listeners out there who may be artists, hopefully you learned some information on the show that can help you. And if anybody would like to be on the Songwriter Show, please just reach out to me and email me. I want to thank everyone for listening, and I hope everyone's unique story gets heard around the world. My name is Sarantos. Please join me every Tuesday night to hear other amazing artists share their fascinating behind-the-scenes stories right here at The Songwriter Show. And tonight, I'm going to leave you with a song of mine that I released a few years ago called The First 5 Seconds. It's about love. I vividly remember the first time I found love at the ripe old age of 19. There's just this crazy electricity in the air, and the moments seem magical. It's a tick in time I'll never forget. Going home that warm summer night with sleep was not an option because my heart was chirpy and thundering, so I wrote the song. I hope you enjoy it. You guys have a great night. I love you guys, and thank you for tuning in.
I see you standing over there. Can I come over?
It's really not a complicated situation. Story's been told many times before. Boy meets girl, fixation, flirtation, persuasion, sensation. It happens all the time.
All the time.
The very first moment is perfect. There's a sudden sparkle in the air.
In the air.
It's crazy hard to define or forget. A picture in your mind for life. First 5 seconds, it's like bathing in sunshine. Nothing more magical, charming, supernatural. The first 5 seconds.
Such a please, please, please.
After the initial anticipation, they both gather their self-control. Start to make some playful conversation. It happens all the time. First 5 seconds, it's like bathing in sunshine. Nothing more magical, charming, supernatural. The first 5 seconds.
Hearts are racing. I'm wondering if the feeling's gonna last. I'm saving. It's a happy, happy ride. My heart's not steady. I'm ready.
First 5 seconds, it's like bathing in sunshine.
Yeah.
Nothing more magical, charming.
First 5 seconds. Come on. I don't even know if I'd last 5 seconds with those hips and those lips. Damn those hips. Damn those lips.
Ooh. First 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's like bathing in sunshine. Nothing more magical, charming.
Hearts are racing. My heart's racing. Is your heart racing?
It's nothing just so more magical, charming, supernatural.
You're so freaking supernatural.
The first 5 seconds.
I can't last 5 seconds. Damn, you're hot.
Thank you for listening to The Songwriter Show. To keep the momentum going, head over to www.songwritershow.com and join our free music community of artists, songwriters, and producers. That's www.songwritershow.com.
Thank you for choosing Pesmo Radio.